You're listening to the PGIM India Insights podcast series by PGIM India Asset Management.
You know, writing a check for your premium for health insurance or life insurance is one thing, but investing in the insurance sector, well, that's a whole other thing and requires a conversation to really understand. Welcome back to PGIM India Insights, everybody. Ahalya here, keeping you company. And yes, it has been a while since we joined you with an episode, but you know what? We were keeping our eye on a particular development in the insurance sector. And now that we have all of that information ready for you, we're ready to talk. Now, on today's episode, we're going to be spotlighting the insurance sector, what it takes to invest in it, what it means to invest in it, you know, the returns you can expect, the movement in the market, the growth opportunities, and a lot more. So stay tuned. It's going to be a very, very interesting one indeed. And as always, Ankit Jain to take it away.
Thanks, Alia. When we do investor awareness program, the first thing we tell participants is to get sufficiently insured with their first salary, to start with health insurance and then term plan. And only after you are sufficiently insured, then one should think about investments. I am Ankit Jain, and you are listening to PGIM India Insights. I have with me Rahul Jagwani, senior analyst of PGIM India Alternates, who will share with us his views on insurance sector. Hi, Rahul.
Hi, Ankit. Happy to be here.
This is the first podcast I'm recording with you. And just like our listeners, even I'm very keen to learn about insurance. It's been very close to my heart, you know, Rahul. So, you know, let me just jump to the first thing. You know, when it comes to insurance, we've always heard in the past when even I was a child about LIC. So from LIC to now private life insurance players, how has insurance sector evolved in the last 2-3 decades?
Yeah. So if we look at the insurance sector of the last 2-3 decades, I would say insurance companies are more diversified than, say, 10 years ago. So in FY 2010, the only product sold by the private sector was ULIP. However, today it's a combination of ULIP, you have term, PAR plus non-PAR. So as such, a slowdown in any one of the segments does not affect the business as much. And that leads to a more sustainable and balanced growth. LIC itself has actually evolved to sell more non-PAR from PAR, which they've been selling for years. So if we look at the industry and, you know, overall, we try to categorize it over FY, say, 2006 to 2010, we had like this industrial liberalization, which was followed by strong growth. And you had a move from, say, tax saving focused products to a much wider suite of products. 2011 to, say, 15 was a recalibration phase for the industry. There were some regulatory changes to ULIP. And the industry moved towards, savings products, with a much higher sum assured. And if you look at the last 8 years, which would be, 2016 to present day today, we've had an industry CAGR of about 12%. We've had private players gain market share. You've had a focus on protection. You've also had a shift in consumer preferences to guaranteed products. And we've had listing, actually, of life insurance companies. So today we have, 5 to 6 life insurance companies which are listed. And lastly, we've also had some changes in taxation-related laws, which you've all seen recently in recent budgets.
Sure. Yeah. Actually, from 2010, you rightly mentioned that it used to be a more ULIP focus, private players, which has now moved to other products. So, you spoke about certain terms like PAR, non-PAR. So if you can, actually explain what are these product offerings available, specifically when you talk about PAR, non-PAR, ULIP?
Yeah, sure. So, if I categorize these products, put into 3 buckets. So like you said, there's PAR, which actually stands for participatory products. So basically in these products, the insurer invests the premiums received in a pool participating fund. And that basically will pay for certain fixed benefits. And once you have those benefits which are paid for, the surplus then is basically distributed to the policyholders. So in a way, if you buy a PAR product, you are participating with the insurance company in the profits of the company. Non-PAR simply stands for non-participating products. So non-participating products would provide a fixed amount of benefits on certain contingent events which are covered under the product. The policyholder do not participate in the profits or losses of the underlying business, and thus the product is also known as without profit product. So this category of non-PAR would include pure term products, you would have saving products, and you would have an immediate or deferred annuity products. And lastly, we come to ULIP. ULIP is a long-term investment product. The returns under ULIP are directly linked to changes in the underlying investment. So the investment risk and reward is directly attributable to the policyholder. Therefore, unlike non-linked products, a ULIP holder can monitor the performance of the policy through the net asset value, which would be released by the companies regularly. So broadly, these were the 3 buckets of the products which are available from insurance companies.
Okay, and amongst the three, ULIP is more linked to, you know, what are the movement in the stock market, if I'm correct.
Yeah, broadly that is correct. Again, that would depend on the structure of the ULIP product. But yeah, it would be more linked to movements in the stock market as well as the bond market. But given the stock market tends to be more volatile, it is more stock market linked. And which is why also when markets do well, we see that there is an increased demand for ULIP products, which has actually been visible in the last 6 months, if we look at the data coming in for insurance companies.
Okay. And Rahul, what is the penetration of insurance today? You know, the kind of population we have, and LIC has been there ever since, you know, 5, 6, 7 decades. And since early 2000s, you have private life insurance companies. But has the penetration really moved?
Penetration overall has actually been increasing, although it's been at a slightly slower rate. But if you look at it over time, this penetration has been inching up slowly. If I look at the data today, the life insurance penetration in terms of a premiums to GDP, it stands at about 3%. So while it has been increasing, there's quite a big gap compared to other developed countries. In terms of number of persons covered, LIC has actually done a good job as they have around 150 million customers. And if we add all the private players, it would be close to about 200 million. However, LIC has not promoted pure protection products. For retail pure protection, 15% of our addressable population, that would be tax filing persons with income over rupees 25,000, would be covered by retail protection policies. So when I look at, you know, like I was saying, for India, the number would be about 3 to 3.2% of premiums over GDP. But I compare that to developed countries. We've had countries who are, like, for example, Japan is at 6%. We've had Taiwan, which is at 14%. So there's still quite a big gap to cover.
So one interesting number you said was approximately 200 million, which is around 20 crore people are insured.
Yes. You know,
out of the 145, 50 crore population. So that's a good number to even know, you know, for our listeners. So this is, you know, on the life insurance space. And there is also, you know, a big component in the whole insurance space is general insurance companies. So how are the companies evolved in that? And what are the various business models, you know, in that segment?
So India is actually the fourth largest non-life insurance market in Asia, and we're the 15th largest globally in 2023. So more or less, the general insurance companies, they operate under a cash before cover model. That essentially means that you're buying the policy and you have to pay your premium upfront and then you get the coverage. You know, in a sense, that would be a very simple way of putting it. If you look at the general insurance industry and how the companies have evolved, you know, over the last, say, 10 years, the big change is that health has been taking over motor as the largest segment. So retail and recently group health, they have grown, you know, very quickly. Whereas motor has kind of, you know, not seen that kind of growth. Pricing pressure, especially in the motor segment, has been, you know, keeping growth under check. And besides that, you know, as we've been seeing that motor sales also have been very volatile, which is why motor has been under pressure. Overall, you know, motor TP penetration is about 80%, and that's not changed much in the past 5-6 years. So I would say the big change has been health, which has been emerging as a pretty large segment and a high growth segment in the general insurance space.
So, you know, Rahul, again, you summarized it pretty well that, you know, health has overtaken, you know, motor insurance in the last, you know, 5-7 years. And we all know, you know, the kind of premiums people are paying. The premiums have only gone up post-COVID. Specifically, when I ask about health insurance companies, how do they make money? You know, like, for example, if I have a 10 lakh sum assured and if I'm paying 50,000. So how do these companies actually make money?
So the idea with a health insurance company is that, to explain this simply, they would be having multiple customers where they pool premiums. And the overall idea is that everyone does not claim their health benefit at the same time. So the companies would make money, number one, by, you know, pooling these premiums, and then they have to keep costs under check. So, you know, strict control over their claims ratio and over their expense ratios would leave these companies with a certain amount of profits. Secondly, is that when health insurance companies also pool, they pool these large amounts of money. And since everyone does not claim this money at the same time, this is then invested in certain, you know, government securities, a little part in equity, where these companies also make investment gains. So, you know, this is how companies make money, where they make money through investments and keeping costs in check from pooling these premiums.
Sure. Rahul, again, you know, if I want to ask you similarly, when it comes to life insurance companies, you know, when we hear about them, we hear a term called as EV, which is an embedded value. So can you just explain our listeners, you know, what is this embedded value?
So embedded value is it's the value of the life insurance company. If I was a life insurance company and if I had to stop doing a business today, embedded value would be the value discounted back of all the policies I've written to present date. So in a sense, embedded value is, to put it simply, it's kind of like a enterprise value for a certain company, but there are a lot more nuances in terms of assumptions behind this embedded value. You know, it's simply it's the expected profit life insurance companies say would make over a very long time frame discounted back to today's value in terms of trying to get a value of the firm. If a life insurance company had to stop doing business today, its value would be equal to its embedded value.
Understood. It's something like a book value for them, is it?
It is more complicated than a book value, but that would be a good starting point. But there are a lot more assumptions which go into calculating this embedded value.
Okay. And in the initial, discussion, you spoke about, the regulatory overhang, the tax changes. So do you think that when it specifically comes to life insurance companies, the regulator overhang is now completely behind us?
I mean, it's hard to say with our regulator, but I would feel that most things are on the cards are out. The last thing probably can be a corporate tax rate cut, which may be revisited with the implementation of IFRS. And the implementation of IFRS is expected from FY27. But, ever since the budget where the government changed the tax on the non-participating products, there has been expectations that they would also bridge this arbitrage on the corporate tax rate. But we have to see how the government goes about it. But that would be one of the major changes left if the life insurance companies, their corporate tax rate gets normalized. Other than that, I would say most things are on the cards out.
Sure. Rahul, what is this corporate tax rate for life insurance companies as we speak?
It's at 15%.
Okay. So there is a good arbitrage of 7-8%. Understood. So, and you expect it to be implemented if IFRS, what you mentioned is going to come in FY27, it can change that time.
It can change.
So, one important platform-based update which had come from regulator a couple of years back, which was Bima Sugam. So what is this Bima Sugam and how can it really help penetration go up?
Bima Sugam, so it's an online platform which has been initiated by IRDAI, where customers can choose a suitable scheme from multiple options given by various companies. So all insurance requirements, including those for life, health and general insurance, can be met by Bima Sugam. The hallmark of Bima Sugam will be that it's streamlined. There will be a paperless claim settlement process and it would also be an aggregator for all sorts of data. So if I look at it as a whole, in a sense, Bima Sugam would have two parts. One would aggregate data across insurers, which would also help us information sharing since we would have all the major insurers on this platform. And secondly, it would be a platform for selling products. Bima Sugam is positioned as competition to other online platforms. And the way we see it is that if the data repository role is done well, it can really help the industry in terms of sharing of data and access to data. The same way credit bureaus have helped banks, that's how probably Bima Sugam can help the life insurance companies over the next few years.
In fact, I was just going to say that it's like a civil moment for insurance sector.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. We are an industry till now where there's been very limited data sharing across players. For example, in the MFI space, in financials, we've seen this as a recent issue crop up where we've had over-leveraging across customers and, there's been lack of data sharing. So clearly there is a need for companies to share data so that policies can be underwritten priced well.
Okay. So final question from my side. So your take on both life and general insurance companies for the next 3, 5, 7 years, a medium to long-term view.
Sure. We believe after an underperformance and the kind of regulatory changes the sector had to deal with, we believe that the sector has been fairly resilient over the last 2-3 years. From that perspective, we like the space. I think from our view, we would expect around mid-teen compounding for the industry. And probably in the high teens for better run players. And our views are even from your regulatory changes, if gradual will, mostly be non-disruptive as they are in expectations right now. So, from a medium perspective, we like the sector and we like the well-run names.
Sure, thank you. In fact, let me just summarize, you know, the discussion for our listeners. And the first and the most important point is, you know, life insurance companies are now very well diversified from ULIP to PAR, non-PAR and term plans. You know, it is no longer dependent on only one segment. So it is very well diversified. Second, the penetration of premium to GDP now stands at 3%. We still have a long way to go when you compare to other developing or developed markets. Third, you know, with more awareness, term life insurance, as you spoke about in your discussion, pure protection is only going up. Fourth, we expect as a house, both life and general insurance companies to grow mid-teens. And obviously, the ones which are run in a better fashion can enjoy high teens as well. So thanks, Rahul, you know, for sharing your thoughts on insurance companies. Any last take, you know, for our listeners from your side?
You know, I think investors in insurance companies have to be patient. These are, I mean, they have been slow movers, but there's a lot of compounding which is happening in the background. So yeah, we just hope for the best.
Great. Thank you, Rahul.
Thank you, Ankit.
That was really insightful, wasn't it? You know, I often try to find other adjectives to describe the podcast series, but insightful, you know, just so happens that it's such a perfect descriptor. We decided to put it in the name. India Insights is delivering. It's staying true to its word. I hope you enjoyed today's episode, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back soon with another podcast. But in the meantime, happy investing. And as always, make sure that you're consulting with a trusted financial advisor who really understands your unique financial journey in order to make the most of your investment journey. All right, adios.
Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.
You're listening to the PGIM India Insights podcast series by PGIM India Asset Management.